Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P on 97.3 ESPN.
Hey, wrapping up our 22nd year on Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of December 27th and 28th. Full disclosure, we're in the studio way early this week because of scheduling. So I hope everyone has a Merry Christmas and all the good. And again, Happy New Year. It's all getting said and done. A lot of stuff going on. Really jammed show. We're going to be talking Tyrannosaurus Todd our next couple of segments with Frank Mihalik, outstanding outdoor writer. Check out the Fisherman Magazine January issue for his big Todd article. He's also a rod designer, the pro togger for Century Rod Company. Hey, listen. Mark your calendars January 9th, 10th, and 11th at the Wildwood Convention Center. The Wildwood Fishing and Boating Expo. Going to be a great time. We hope to see you there. Giving away a Yeti cooler. Got one each day. I think it's like $300, $400. The owner, promoter, cool guy, Jerry Vessels, plans to be in the studio with us next week to talk up the show. Just a reminder, they let loose the birds. What was that song by the Rescues? Let Loose the Horses. Yeah, they let loose the birds. We're talking pheasants and quail for the 30th. They're going to be stocked the evening of the 29th. Here it is, last day, and they put them out there. Everyone's included in the Rackafin area up central. Assinpink, they were talking ringnecks here. Assinpink, 280. Collier's Mills, 180. Howardsville, oh yeah, popular spot, 50. Manahawkin, 50. Manasquan, 100. Medford, 80. And the Forge, Stafford Forge, 140. Down here in the southern tier counties, we have Dix is going to get 135, Glassboro 95, Heiserville 60, Mad Horse 90, Millville 300. Again, the best part about this time of year, not that many guys out there, man. Okay, Nantucket 110. I love Nantucket. Port Republic 60, Tuckahoe 100, and Winslow 125. For the Bob Whites, both Greenwood and Peasley getting 400 each. Really, get out there and enjoy it. There's going to be some prime bird hunting. And they do hold over into January in certain areas. Make sure you get your new pheasant and quail stamp and hunting license if you're doing that. So grab that cup, grab that rub. We'll be right back with Frank Mihalik. We're talking tog. Winter tog, boy. Whoa. Separates the toggers from the togosauruses. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
Saturday morning in the locker with Billy Schwein, producer Nick Earnshaw, and former Kansas City Chiefs wide receiver Dave Klemic join me in the studio. We will warm you up with spirited sports talk. The Eagles shuffle off to Buffalo, and we will preview Sunday's game. The Sixers face the Bulls on Friday night, and we will recap all the action. Hour two, it's time for our high school athletes in the spotlight with Fran McLaughlin, brought to you by the Philly Pretzel Factory of Egg Harbor Township. Flyers talk and more. It's the locker with Billy Schwein, Saturday morning from 10 a.m. to noon on 97.3 ESPN.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P on 97.3 ESPN.
A lot of stuff going on now, even though it is the end of the year. The bite of winter, we had a little bit of a couple of bites in the ass there a little earlier in the month going on. Tom P, not that much to do, really, really. Oh, there's a lot of stuff to do. Small game season still going on, winter bow season going on, various deer season besides winter bow still going on, and the fishing. We had 3-day opportunity for ice in North Jersey. Couldn't make it. Went up to the Poconos. They had probably 2 inches of rain and 45, 50 degrees. So that went out the window. But things turning around in the salt, it's tog time. Okay, we shouldn't say that. January season especially separates the toggers from the togosauruses. Now, if you get the January issue of the Fisherman that just came out, on page 34, January jumbos. New Jersey's tog season continues by when we can only get him a few times a year because he is so jammed. Frank Mihalik, he is an incredible, incredible outdoor writer, gives seminars. He is also the Northeast Saltwater Fishing Rod Designer and consultant for Century Rods. His one rod, the Pro Togger, has been nothing short of phenomenal. Can't keep it going. Hey, Frank. Great to have you on. Glad to catch you, this late in the season before you really get cranking in January talking. How are you and the family, brother? Everything good?
Doing great, Tom. How about you?
Oh, man, I read that article last night when we came in. I says, whoa, man, this guy is on it, my lovely Dee Marie. Okay, let's see. We have winter bow. We have big tog. Winter bow, big tog. What do you think? I said, babe, we're all geared for winter bow, but we are going to try to get a trip or two in there, Frank. You are indeed the influencer, my man.
Thanks, Tom.
This time of year, Frank, again, like I said, separates the toggers from the togosaurus hunters, which you are one of the best out there. The difference is now water temperature, structure, where the fish are hiding, what they're feeding proclivities are. It is indeed a challenging time of year, is it not?
Absolutely. I mean, and the thing that influences that most is the weather. You know, like we had a little bit of snowfall up here in South Jersey in like the I-95 area, maybe like 10 days ago. And it hung around for a couple of days and then it melted. And, you know, by the time we get snow up in like South Jersey, by the time that melts and reaches our waters off of like Cape May and off of Delaware, it's usually, you know, depending on when it melts, it might be three days. It might be a week. And that'll suddenly shock that water temperature down. And that'll mess the fishing up for a couple of days. And then it usually comes back until that surface temp gets down to about, well, when it gets down to about 42, it starts getting really, really tough.
Now, Frank, I noticed that as well. 1 degree, 2 degree temperature swing, and it's either they're chewing or I shouldn't say chewing. They're nibbling, grabbing, or they are shut down. And that could happen in the space of a day or two, can it not?
Absolutely. I mean, we went out last Saturday. We were out on legal limit with Captain TJ. Real nice boat out of Cape May, 35-foot dubby, beautiful boat. And we went out to Cape May Reef. Now, the day before, it was blowing like 25 to 40. Yeah. we had so much rain up in South Jersey. And we looked at the weather and we made the call and we decided to go because at 7 o'clock in the morning, it was blowing like 15 to 25 by 8, by 9 o'clock, it was blowing like 10 to 20. I was like, you know what? Let's leave at 8:30. By the time we got out there, we had like four and a half footers. By the time we came in at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it was flat as a pancake. So it ended up being a nice day. But about 10:30 or 11, when the tide started coming out, all of a sudden we had a lot of real, you know, a lot of real dirty reed grass on top of the water because the rain washed it off the marshes. And the water had that milky color that a lot of fresh water in the salt water will do. It really beat up the bite later in the day. Earlier, we had a little bit of a half a bite, but I'll tell you what, man, if we ever can get this weather to settle down for a little bit and we can get out and fish the spots we want to fish,
right,
I think we're going to find something good.
Well, Frank, let me ask you this. Under those conditions, you said it calmed down later on, but those are tough. You have one day to fish, and that's the situation. I mean, how do you get through that? The tog can be caught under those conditions, correct? You've done it.
Oh, absolutely. It has more to do with, you know, if it's wind. Okay, windy is windy. We can go out there. We can power through that. That's okay. It's when you have a lot of snow melt in 3 or 4 days before, or a whole lot of rain, freshwater runoff. Like the day before, that will really, really beat the hell out of it. And even though you're 10 miles offshore and you're in 80-foot water, man, you can see it. You can absolutely see it out there what it does to the conditions.
Frank, mixing in with cold bottom temperatures, the bite this time of year can be super picky, can it not? Going into your article here, listen, check page 34, Fisher Magazine. If you don't subscribe, go out and buy it. Frank, it's the approach is analytical without being clinical, if that makes sense. I mean, I read it twice. I gleaned information. I thought, I tog fish. I mean, I've read your articles before. And I said, you delved into some other things there, but it's not being too, you know, overbearing. The simplest things that get overlooked this time of year tog hunting, Frank, what are they?
Make sure you have a fresh crab on every time you drop to the bottom. Make sure if the fish do start biting, you make sure when the captain says drop them in, you drop them in. And don't leave the rail until he says we're moving, pull them up. Don't go inside and sit down and get a sandwich. Stay at the rail and work, because there's times when we have a little flurry of maybe five minutes during the day where we catch a couple of big fish, and you don't want to be the guy who's not in the water at that time. It is a little uninspiring, man. I mean, when you're out there and you got, you know, 20 knot winds blowing right at your face, it can be a little bit daunting at times, but you that's what separates the toggers from the, you know,
from the togosauruses. Hey, Frank, one thing, man, my lovely Dee Marie wants to put it this way. She says, man, this winter tog, it's like a war of attrition. You know,
it is.
It's who's going to outlast who, and it gets tight down there. Frank, I noticed one particular caught my eye. Didn't even ever pay much thought to this because I don't do it that often. But you said when dogfish are around, the spiny dogs, don't crush the crab. Why?
Right. Well, the spiny dogfish are kind of like sea bass, where if you, a lot of times when I'm fishing for blackfish, I'll fish like a 3 or 4 inch white crab. I'll cut the claws off of either side. I'll put a hook, I'll put a two hook rig, I'll put a hook in each side of the crab. I'll put it on the deck and I'll step on it. I'll crush it a little bit before I drop it to the bottom. If the dogfish are around, I want to make sure I don't do that because I don't want to attract them to my bait. Mm-hmm. That's also a reason why I will paint my sinkers with flat red paint, because I don't want to have any reflection. Where if I do get a hit with a blackfish and I swing and I miss, and my sinker and crab get lifted off the bottom and it goes back down to the bottom, if that sinker is shiny and it catches the eye of that dogfish, the next bite I get is going to be a dogfish.
Wow.
So that's one reason why I do that.
Frank, you mentioned rigs and a couple of, I think it was around 2000, 2001. When did the word issues replace the word problem? I noticed in the article, Frank, you had a problem or two with what they call a slider rig. Go into that, please.
Slider rig is a really good rig for blackfish. Take a 5-aught owner cutting point octopus hook, mm-hmm. snell it onto a piece of 60-pound mono about maybe 14 inches long. After you snell the hook on, drop another hook down and let it rest, it nest right on top of that other hook, and tie a perfection loop in the top. There's a couple bad things that I told you here. A perfection loop under a lot of pressure, a perfection loop will pop. A perfection loop will break.
Mm-hmm.
Also, and I've had this happen to me twice, where I've hooked. One time I dropped at a bottom. I hooked a 17-pounder. I brought it up. I reeled it in on my slider rig. I had it hooked on the snelled hook, okay? Took the fish off, took a couple pictures, let them go, rebaited, dropped at a bottom. Boom, boom, boom. I'm in again. Another huge fish. I have the fish about halfway up. Boom, it's gone. I pull up. I hooked the fish on the sliding hook. And from the sliding hook being jammed up against the snelled hook, the cut end of the wire where the eye ends cut through the leader. And I came up with a leader exactly the length I had it, but both my hooks were gone and it was cut right there. This wow. not only happened to me once, but this also happened to me some years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's enough. You know, I can only handle so much heartbreak. There's other rigs I can use. There's other rigs I can use besides a slider rig.
Frank, into the mechanics insofar as the tools. Pro Togger, we know the success of that rod. It's built for perfection here. Besides the rod, Frank, now, your Pro Togger, describe the benefits of that.
One of the biggest benefits of the Pro Togger, I mean, the blank is perfect. It's really sensitive. It's really light. It's easy for you to fish it all day when you're fishing a slack line. But the length of the butt is pretty short. Like from the end cap to where the reel sits is only about 13 inches. Then there's a foregrip in front of that.
Right.
The reason being when you catch a big fish, from the time you hook the fish and what you do in that first 5 seconds is mission critical. And what I mean by that is, stay with me for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Say you're a fish on the bottom. You come up, you eat a crab. This guy swings this 8-foot rod and he's 80 foot ahead of you. This blackfish, number one, he gets a hook in his face and he starts getting pulled off the bottom. And immediately he doesn't know that there's an issue. It's like, oh, what's pulling me off the bottom? Now I just swung an 8-footer, so I got him maybe 10 foot off the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
While I swing, the rod butt goes in my hip. My left hand is on my foregrip, pulling the rod towards my chest. My right hand is on the reel, cranking for all I'm worth.
Mm-hmm.
By the time that fish realizes he's in trouble, he's 20 foot away from the wreck.
Bingo.
You know, my drag is locked down. My rod butt's in my gut. I'm in an extremely powerful position. Because let me tell you what, fish for blackfish like you fish with fluke. Put your rod under your armpit, okay? You're going to pull with your left hand. You're going to pull your foregrip up. You're not in a very locked-in, powerful position here. When that big fish wants to go to the bottom, your rod tip goes whoop, and away he goes.
Yeah.
So try to think of it kind of like a crane. You know, you need to use that fishing rod like a lever. It's a simple tool. There's a lever. Your left hand is your fulcrum. That's the point where it pivots. You need to have the leverage to lock that fish in, lock that drag down, because when he realizes he's in trouble, he's going to start going to the bottom. And that's when I, you know, just stop reeling, just sit there and hold him. Just lock him up and hold him. And then, you know, it's not going to take too long for him to, first he's heading to the bottom. Next thing you know, okay, he can't go to the bottom. He heads to the left a little bit. The bend comes out of the rod a little bit. You start getting some turns on them, and at that point, you play the game the right way, and you got yourself a trophy.
Okay, Frank, speaking of, again, the tools, the rod, reel, you mentioned drag, critical. Your preference, I'm not putting you on the spot, but your preference in reels for this drag specific, where you say, this is the best drag I found, what are you using?
Accurate makes a really nice new reel. It's called an Ascender.
Uh-huh.
It's a model 300. It's a small reel. It's available with either a jigging, like a T-handle, or a nice rubber knob. That nice rubber knob is really great for bottom fishing. It's a hell of a reel at a $300 price point. Penn makes some really nice. Penn Torx are very nice.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Very nice reel. You're into it for $250, $300 for these reels. I was so loyal to another manufacturer of reels for so long. And guess what? All of a sudden, they changed the reel. Now it's a slow pitch jigging reel. It's got some big goofy handle on the side. It's got these levers. It's got all, you know, and they ruined the best bottom fishing reel on the market. How can I tell people, oh, buy this reel when it's not available anymore? You know, so I had to kind of move on, and I've worked with some of these other companies like Accurate that they can package and design a reel that's a really good price, and it's an absolute beast.
Okay, joining us online is Frank Mihalik. He is a saltwater, he is the saltwater fishing rod designer, Northeast Century Rods, also a consultant. We're talking Togasaurus time, January. This is the separates again the Togers from the Togasaurus. Frank, hang in for another segment. People, grab that cup, grab that Red Bull. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
This is the radio home for Philadelphia Eagles football. The Eagles continue the 2025 season tomorrow in Buffalo against the Bills.
Back goes Allen. Allen has time. Too much time. Now they've got him! They've got him! It's a sack! It's Brandon Graham!
Pre-game coverage starts at 3 p.m. with Merrill Reese and Mike Quick calling all the action starting at 4:25. This is where the Eagles play. 97.3 ESPN, South Jersey's Eagles Station. Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. on 97.3 ESPN.
Here we go to the gap below, back inside Rock and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of December 27th, 28th, one of my favorite guests on Rock and Fin Radio when we can track him down. This time of year, especially when he's not out there pro-targeting, Frankie Mihalik. He is, again, check the January issue, Fisherman Magazine, page 34, January Jumbos, New Jersey, tog season continues. This is Togasaurus time. And Frank, I noticed one thing. And besides you, other toggers I speak with that specialize this time of year, they're after big fish. Are there instances where you're catching, shorts, legal shorts, as in 14 and a half inches, as opposed to what you consider a short, 4 or 5 pounds? I mean, is this strictly a big fish game where you guys are fishing?
We're going for big fish, but unfortunately, you know, like I said earlier in this episode, you know, we had bad weather. The bite was not really what it was. We each, you know, we had a boatload of killers, man, and each guy only caught like 4 fish all day long. Mm-hmm. One of my buddies caught an 8.5 pounder. You know, congrats to him. Great job. But with 1 8.5 pounder for today, we were hoping to do much better than that. But you got to keep, you don't know if you don't go, you know, so you just got to look at the weather and make the choice and do the best you can do. But this time of year, we really want to start getting to, you know, reef site 11. We need to start heading further offshore because inshore is starting to get a little, like I said, it's easily shut down by a lot of rain or by really cold temps or some ice.
Okay, Frank, back to the tools. One last time. Again, I was going to mention this, okay? Your connection, I assume you're using, what, 65-pound braid, 50-pound braid, or heavier? And your leader, Frank, is fluorocarbon necessary? Hard mono leader suffice? I mean, or tog, really, attuned to what's attaching their crab or what?
It's really not. Personally, I use Tsunami Trophy Pro fluorocarbon.
Yeah,
but that only goes up to 60 pounds. So I also use 80-pound Andy monofilament leader material. Here's what I do, Tom. I have a rod where if I'm fishing the inshore reefs like Wildwood Reef, Cape May Reef, if I'm fishing, pretty shallow water, I'll have 50-pound braid, 60-pound top shot, 60-pound leader. If I'm going for a trophy hunt, if we're going, 30 miles offshore, fishing 65-pound braid, 80-pound top shot, 80-pound leader. It's all a system. It's all about locking that drag up, that fish hits, and I got him, and he's just going to sit there. He's not going to break me off, and that's why I rig with the system like I do, if that makes sense.
Oh, it doesn't make perfect sense, but Frank, now choosing your areas to fish, when you commiserate with the captain, where are we going to be? This time of year, one wreck or rock pile or reef better than the other insofar as the structure, like, Tog Love Tanks. I always hear that, had great luck fishing, but not this time. When do you pick or choose your sites besides weather and conditions? Do you have a couple of spots locked in with a contingency plan before you leave the dock?
It's all water depth compared to the water temperature. Tanks are great. If you have a really good captain with a small boat and he's good at fishing individual tanks, he will position that boat off to the side of the tank. So when you drop your baits down or your jigs, they're going to go right on the side of the tank or maybe right on top of it. But a tank's only like 50 foot long, so you're not going to be fishing it with big boats. If we're fishing, one of the things about Reef Site 11 is it's like off of Lewis, Delaware.
Yeah.
All those blackfish that go up into Delaware Bay, I mean, Delaware Bay is a big bay. The fish that go up there and hang out in that structure up there, eventually that water is going to get cold enough and they're going to push out of the bay. When they push out of the bay, they're going to run right into Reef Site 11 and hopefully they hang out there for a little while. And that's why 11 has been so good for so long. It's constantly replenished. Whereas if you're fishing a single wreck that's 40 miles offshore and that fish lives on that wreck, if you pull four or five big fish off that wreck, you might have taken half of the population of large fish off of the piece. Might kind of wipe it out.
I was just going to ask you, Frank, nature abhors a vacuum. Sea bass are transient. You see, oh, man, we kill them. Go back the next day or 2 days later, there's more sea bass. Not so with tautog, correct?
Not so. You're correct. The fish will move around a little bit, but nothing's going to push them out. And, like in Reef Site 11, it's roughly 100 foot deep. That water is deep enough where there can be fish that winter over there. They can literally stay there, and they can go semi-dormant, and they can stay there. I'm sure they don't all. But if you're on a wreck 30 miles offshore in 140 foot of water, I would bet that those fish live on that one piece and they don't move. Now, if it's a reef site out there and there's a bunch of structure around, they may swim around that structure, but they may spend their whole life just on that one reef site, because they really have no reason to leave. If the water temp is active enough that the fish can stay active, then the bait can stay active and they can keep eating and keep growing. Whereas if they do go dormant and they do take a little nap for a month or two, they don't eat, so they don't grow.
Well, Frank, what's the deepest that you had successful talking? Have you gone beyond 100 feet?
Yeah, like 150.
What?
150, 155.
I said tog, not tuna. You said really?
Yeah, I got you.
Wow.
And yeah, we every now and then we do a little exploring for sure.
What are you doing? You using tile fish weights or what?
No. We had a nice weather window. This one particular trip, I was out with John Azzotto out of Indian River Inlet. Dante Soriente, he put this trip together. He called me up and asked me to go, and I went. But you know what? This was, looking back on this, I constantly replay this in my head. I really made a big mistake on that trip because I went out there and fished out there the same way I was fishing out of Point Pleasant.
Uh-huh.
I was fishing a glider rig. I was fishing halves of big crab. I thought I had it all together. I made a mistake, and my mistake was there was a lot of current out there. What I should have done was I should have went with a single hook rig with a small hole crab on it. when there's a lot of current, that's an excellent presentation. That's what I should have done. The guys on the other side, it became a sectional bite. The guys on the other side of the boat were dropping down, and they were getting bit. My bait was getting blown away from the wreck a little bit, even though I was using a 12-ounce weight. But I was using these two big half of crabs, which was kind of like a parachute. If I would have used a smaller whole crab, it would have been able to get more straight up and down, and I think I would have done a lot better. I caught a few fish that day, but I definitely would have been in the zone. And, I mean, don't get me wrong. We had probably half a dozen fish that day between 10 and 15 pounds. I think Azotto had a 15.3 that day. That was his PB at the time.
Frank, let me ask you this. When, so far as, again, this time of year, cold water, the feeding is sporadic. Will Togg venture by far, I mean, 2, 3, 4 feet out from their wreck, or you have to hit their hidey hole right with the crab pretty much right in front of their noses? What's the dealio?
No, they'll move around, especially the time of the day when the tide is slack. When you have a real strong current and the tide is running, those fish want to stay on the down tide, the down current side of the wreck, just so they can, you know, it's like a trout. Think of a trout hiding behind a rock in a stream. They can sit there and expend a lot less energy. And again, if they are beginning to go dormant, they really want to be inside of the wreck where they can kind of fall asleep and not get washed away. But also they have some protection from other fish that might want to eat them. But when it gets into situations like that, you know, you just need to really wait it out. And because when slack tide comes, you slack tide might be a 15-minute period.
Yeah.
Maybe the 10 minutes before, the 15 minute during slack, and the 10 minute after, that might be the time when the big fish come out and they look and they eat because there's not so much current to deter them. It might only be 10 minutes in the middle of that tide window that they come out. You might have 10 minutes to catch all your big fish for the day. So, like, I constantly am working with the captain. What time slack tide? How far away is it? Where are we going to be at? The captain will always make it so that we are on a high potential piece of structure around slack tide, meaning before, during, and after. He's on a spot where we want to be that we know that that's a really good potential for big fish.
Yeah, joining us online this morning is Frank Mihalik. He is the Northeast Saltwater fishing rod designer and consultant, Century Rods. He designed the famous Pro Togger that probably one of the best, if not the best tog rod out there for the Northeast. Well, Frank, let's get to the meat of the matter. Jonah Crabs, a.k.a. White Leggers, is that it? Or are there other baits that tog at this time of year we'll take a nibble on?
White crabs are the best, mostly because they're a crawling crab. And they're natural out there in those depths. Mm-hmm. Green crabs are more of an inshore species. They live around the rocks in shallower waters. But green crabs will work. I mean, green crabs will work. I really prefer a white legger. I've caught really good on spider crabs. Hermit crabs are good, but fishing hermit crabs is like fishing a hermit crab is like drinking soup through a straw, man. It's like mush. It's like you put a hermit crab on a hook, you drop it to the bottom, you get a tap. You get boop, and that's it. Your crab is gone. You get boop, that's it. You're done. So for me to change from fishing a white crab where I'm waiting for the good, you know, I'm waiting for the good boom, 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 and then I'm swinging. And I go and I put on a hermit crab and I get tick. It's like it's very, very difficult for me to make that swap. But spider crabs will actually catch really good, too. Don't overlook them. When everybody on the boat is fishing white crabs, occasionally I'll take a nice spider and put it on and crush it with my foot and let her eat.
Frank, where the hell are you getting spider crabs, man?
They come in the pots that we we're hauling the white crabs.
No kidding. Wow. Hey, shout out to, I don't know if he's even still around, Paulie Biacalp, long ago professional wrestler, the Equalizer, on a Carolyn Ann 3 way back when, Barnacle, a New Year's Day trip. He gave a tutorial, Frank, he was commercial fishing too, so he had these wild-looking hermit crabs. Mm-hmm. And more than he put a tutorial on. But like you said, one little bite on that, and they're gone. It's done. Squish. Done.
Yeah, they're weird, man. They're kind of like a snail and a crayfish put together. They're like mush.
Frank, question. I've been, you know, I've lost fish to this. In the article, I want to mention, as you mentioned it earlier, one of the problems with, again, big tog, and you emphasize it, put in your own words again. Listen, it's a great article. Page 34, January, issued of Fisherman Magazine, New Jersey's Tog Season Continues, January Jumbos by Frank Mihalik, our very special guest on Rack and Fin this morning. Pumping the rod during a fight with a sizable, you know, big tog. The no. Go into that, please.
Yeah, again, your rod's a machine. You're locked in. Turn the handle. Don't pump the rod. You have a 10-ounce weight 10 inches away from the nose of this fish. You're going to start pumping the rod like somehow you think you're like short stroking the elephant or something. Yeah, you say yeah. You're pumping the rod. Now you have a 10-ounce weight moving up and down in front of this fish's face, changing the pull of the line. Do you think that's smart? I don't.
Uh-huh.
I've seen a lot of guys lose fish by pumping the rod. A lot.
Well, he said that for my benefit, people. I've been known to do that. Well, Frank, let's the end game now. Fish comes up. You're in 100 feet of water, 90 feet of water. What's the condition of that fish?
Even pressure, okay? Let's say I hook the fish. I got the fish away from the bottom. My rod's still in a locked-in position. I'm reeling it up. When I have him about 30 feet off the bottom, I'm going to drop a couple clicks off my drag. Then I'm going to move my rod butt up under my arm. So I'm still reeling this fish in at like a medium speed. When he's giving me turns, I'm taking it. If he starts dogging again, I'm going to slow down. I get him coming up again. I'm going to drop probably another click off, and I'm still steadily bringing this fish up.
Okay.
My top shot, which is about 20 feet long, I see my FG knot coming up. When it starts coming up near my tip, I'm going to drop my rod tip a little bit to get that knot right inside my guide, really, really easy. Now, at the time, say you're netting the fish, Tom, and you're on my left side. I'm intentionally going to, now I don't see the fish yet. I'm going to move the rod over to the right side away from you. And I'm going to keep on reeling this fish up nice and slow. And I do not want the fish to come out of the water. I don't want his head to break the surface of the water. When I reel the fish up and I see that he's about, say, 3-4 feet down and he's still coming up, and you're on my left with the net, I'm going to move my rod slowly from my right to my left. So now the fish is swimming right towards you.
You have
the net in the water. He swims right into the net.
And there we go.
You pull the net into the boat. I put my rod tip up in the air. I release the spool on my rod so that you don't break my rod in half. And then you get the fish unhooked, and then we get a couple pictures. And if he's in good shape, if his air bladder is not blown out of his butt, we let him go right away. If he is a little blown out, we'll usually put him in a live well and let him acclimate for four or 5 hours so we can let him go.
Frank, I was just going to ask you, the conservation end of things, these big fish are primarily females, breeders. You've done a lot of research on tog, and you mentioned what you hear. Oh, that fish is 30 years old. That fish is 40 years old. I know you did the ogolith studies. What are you finding? Like a 12, 15 pound tog, 12, 14 pound, whatever. How old is that fish?
When you get fish between 10 and 20 pounds, they normally go about 1 year per pound. Give or take a couple, depending on if you're in southern waters or in northern waters. Okay, they do grow a little faster down here. But give or take, they're about a year per pound. So if you get a 15-pound blackfish, he's probably 14 to 16 years old. And the people that, first of all, people that say, oh, thanks for releasing the fish. Don't thank me for releasing my fish. It's my fish. I don't thank you for not eating my cheeseburger. It's your cheeseburger. You want it, you eat it. Don't worry about, Don't be so pompous to think you should thank other people. If I want to release a fish, which I love to do, it has to do with what kind of condition the fish is in. Know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And the other thing is people say, oh, it's a dinosaur. It's 50 years old. Bro, it's not. If it was 50 years old, it would be a 50-pound blackfish. So, again, people, you hear people say things over the years. And I'm not the kind of guy that goes around correcting people. But at the same time, sometimes these people get so overzealous with this that they really take offense to it. And it's like, I had a guy a couple of weeks ago. He's like, oh, I guess I've been lying to people for 40 years. I'm like, yeah, bro, you have, because you don't know what you're talking about.
Very well said, as only Frank Mihalik can say it. Listen, don't forget, I mentioned opening the show, the January 9th through 11th, the Wildwood Fishing and Boating Expo. I don't know which day it is. Go to Wildwood, fishingexpowildwood.com. Frank will be giving a Togasaurus seminar. He will be there live and dangerous and in person. Frank, can't wait to see you there. I don't know which day, but I'll make sure I'll be there the day you are there.
Thanks, Tom. I'm looking forward to it. We were at the Wildwood Show last year for the first time.
Uh-huh.
We had a blast. Actually, my wife came down. We hung out. We viewed the show. There were some vendors selling some really cool stuff. My wife got a really cool Santa necklace that she, you know, people are like loving it this year during the holidays. It was a great show. It was much better than I thought it was going to be. And we had a ball there. So I'm looking forward to doing it again this year.
Well, Frank, thanks for sharing the knowledge with Rack and Fin Radio listeners. Listen, again, the Fisherman Magazine, page 34, January edition. January Jumbos and Jersey Tog season continues by our guest Frank Mihalik and an outstanding, again, Frank, you were analytical without being clinical. I guess I read this twice. I've been running for 100,000 years. Mihalik, I'm not stroking you. That was one of your best tomes ever, man. Good piece. Excellent piece.
Thanks, Tom.
Well, Frank, you take care. Have a happy new year. Thank hope you. To see you one day. I'll see you with the Wildwood Expo, man.
Yo, Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. I hope you guys have awesome holidays, and I hope we all get out there and get big dogs.
Take care, brother. Be good.
See you, Tom.
The man is the man, the myth, the legend, just an overall good guy, always willing to share the knowledge. But he made a point. Oh, let that fish go. No, you don't have, and I want to keep a tog. Oh, you're killing the future of tog. I want to keep a tog to eat. It's legal to keep. They're legal lengths for a reason. He's a biologist that set these. Okay, grab that cup. Grab that Red Bull. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. on 97.3 ESPN.
That was Frank Mihalik talking Togasauruses. Let's get down to Bruinsauruses. Jersey Bear season extension concluded this past Saturday. We had a total, one snuck in under the wire, I understand, 467 Bruins over the three segments. And we were, my lovely Dee Marie always says, don't put it in the universe. Sorry, but I love you, but I just can't help it. You know me. I'm a creature of habits about, hey, you have some mild weather so far, temperate weather. It's good. Get a deep freeze. A lot of those bears are going to den. And what happened? What happened during that segment B? We had the freeze going on. Join us online right now to talk the results of the black bear harvest in Jersey. Good friend of Rack and Fin Radio, Jim Oxley. He is a Bureau of Wildlife Management Chief with DEP's Fish and Wildlife. Talking Bruins, Jim. How you doing, brother?
Good, Tom. Always a pleasure talking to you.
Oh, great. You are so nice. I appreciate it. Well, Jim, again, 467, I was saying to myself, and I said it to you, a 400 would be good. A lot of people want more. 500, a base figure, not a base figure, but like a prime number. 467 is not bad, bro, considering the curve that Mother Nature threw us, because I put it in the universe.
Yeah, so if you remember, that opening day back in Segment A really set us back. We were 50-some bears behind from the prior year. And, we really did a great job catching up. 467 compared to 473. I didn't think we'd get that close, considering, like you mentioned, the weather, how cold it was for B. So I'm pleased with it.
That's always that factor. Like, again, the first segment with that rain, it was just horrific. But 467 Bruins attest to the fact, well, the antis that scream, you're wiping out the bears, you're wiping out the bears, the harvest remains steady. Bear population is in good shape, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we have definitely a thriving community in northwest New Jersey, for sure.
Personally, I think more could be harvested. Jim, has there been any, I'm putting you on the spot, has there been any banter, because I hear it at various meetings and things like that, the October season should be longer, or the December season, well, that didn't pan out this year, should be longer. We got nailed with the freeze. But ways to increase the harvest. I don't know, 467, 400, 500 range, that seems pretty steady.
Sure. I mean, that's stuff that we consider and discuss every year. I know the banter is, you know, just have 2 weeks in October and skip the December season. And we do weigh all that out. There are different things and different considerations that, you know, that get figured. But as for now, we're going to stick with the split, mm-hmm. you know, October and December. But we do look into that every year for sure.
I know, Jim, some people I speak to only hunt October. Other guys now they wait until December. So you have devotees in both sides of the equation, in both camps, so to speak. But now, Jim, with the bear population itself, again, those northern tier counties, has there been any further expansion? They were found in all 21 counties. I get that they've been seen there, whatever. But has there been noticeable expansion, say, down through that horrible belt line, you know, say Trenton down to Point Pleasant, that heavily trafficked, developed demarcation? Has there been any research in the southern tier counties insofar as Bears being around in any appreciable numbers?
No, nothing really further south than Somerset. Even Mercer, we know they're there from sightings, but we don't research trap down there because we just don't get enough bang for our buck.
Uh-huh.
We have in the past, and we'll set up traps, and we could be down there for 2-3 weeks at a time and not have any success. So that's why we consider continue to just concentrate, in the Northwest.
Bear, I remember a couple of years ago, I got a phone call. Oh, my God, there's a bear in Manahawk. And there was a bear in one of the malls up there off 70. There's a bear in Manahawk. I said, leave it alone. It's going to, thing disappeared, never to be seen again. I'm sure it's still living somewhere. Gets in those piney woods like Stafford Forge or back down through there. So I'll tell you, there's plenty of habitat down this way spread out through
it. Absolutely.
It reminds me of
it's prime. Over time, they'll get down there, for sure.
Jim, hold on. Jim, on the overall, you mentioned bear trapping, bear research. Shout out to Mike and Madonia. Good guy, fishing wild, handling the bears. Jim, now, is this the time when research begins, going into the dens, checking for cubs, tagging, what have you. When does all this tagging actually take place? Go.
Take place in the spring. So when they're denned up with mom, some of the moms that we put radio collars on in this past fall, that's who we'll look in. We'll keep track of her, and when she has cubs, then we'll go in and tag the cubs and, collect some data off the cubs.
I remember the one photo in the digest was Madonia with, that bear had to be 600 or 700 pounds in Morris County. And Morris County, still sort of rural, but I'll tell you, man, if you get up that Rockaway area through there, there's a lot of people there, there's a lot of houses, there's a lot of pad sites, and these bears are thriving. They're amazing critters.
Yeah, that's always something that, the hunting needs to be expanded out that way, but there's just no interest as of right now.
The thing with the bears, people, you got a big bear, you got a lot of meat there, and it's a chore. Jim, it's a chore. I've been a couple of months trying to get these things out. So you get a bear one year, I mean, you may want to lay off another year. Jim, are there any besides development? Again, that is the the nasty word, development, anything impacting bear populations, the health of the population itself?
No, they're definitely hardy. And that's one of the things we do when we extract blood and DNA is we're looking for any diseases or anything that's going to negatively affect the population. And as of right now, there's nothing identified. They are just as healthy as can be. And, we talked about it before. We're up to 40 different states. Hunters from 40 different states participated, including Alaska and Hawaii. So it's really becoming an event. It's just, as you mentioned, probably the best black bear population in the whole North America.
Yeah, Jim, we're speaking with Jim Oxley. He is the Bureau Chief Wildlife Manager in DEP's Fish and Wildlife. We're talking the bear hunt results. Again, 467, good count, a few less than last year. But, again, during that segment, we lost that first day. They were 50 pounds, so they caught up pretty well. Well, Jim, going with this, the reproductive capacities of Jersey bears, again, the number of cubs is above the national average, is it not?
Yeah, so New Jersey bears are at 2.9, cubs per litter on average. I believe the national average is like 2.4. So, yeah, and all that just goes into the healthiness of the landscape that they live on. They're just happy bears here in New Jersey.
I think of Yogi Boo Boo, man. When you say happy bears. Well, Jim, the hunt now, as per rule of law, whatever, you have another, 2 or 3 years before it comes up for review again? What's the dealio?
So the current one goes all the way through 29. So once 2029 comes to pass, then we'll have to come up with another management plan. So this one was good for 7 years, so it went in place in 22 and runs all the way through 29. Okay,
Jim, we're up against a hard break here. Let's get into some of the sizes of the bears, segment A, segment B, and I guess the extension. We got some healthy Bruins here, bro.
So the biggest one for the year, that was segment A, that was a male, still at 598 pounds out of West Milford. The biggest male in segment B, 390 pounds from Sussex. I don't have the numbers on the extension size yet. I can get that in a couple of days. And the largest female, that was also in segment A, 326 pounds from mm-hmm. Independence Township there, Warren.
I know Warren. Yeah, so, I know yeah. very well. Yeah.
Big ones. Yeah.
So, Jim, we came in at the 20% was like the optimum bellwether for that. We came in at 19.3%. In your opinion, though, if we had decent weather during the B and into the extension, we could have passed that mark. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think if the weather had cooperated, I don't think that we would have even had the extension. We were so close, and a couple of, you know, statistical anomalies. You know, we had one time we had 61 bears come in and none of them were tagged. And like, as you know, all of them were based on, you know, how many tagged come in. So, you know, it really kind of keeps you stuck at that harvest rate when you don't have any tagged bears come in.
So, Jim, with the research coming up now, do you have a minimum number, maximum number of bears that you will tag?
We shoot for around 180 to 200,
mm-hmm.
You know, somewhere in that range. Historically, that's what we shoot for.
Hey, any of these things show up as roadkill? I remember seeing a huge one. I don't know if it was a collar or not, because you stop on Route 15 up in Sparta, you're going to jail. He's on the shoulder of the road.
Yeah.
I mean, do any tags come back or collar, whatever, from bears that are subject to hits from cars and trucks and whatever?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So that's what. So if we research tag, you know, let's say 185 bears, and then we do get some come in as a roadkill, they'll be removed from that available for harvest lot. So yeah, we do keep track of those. Last count, there were 26 bears alone on Route 80.
80, yeah, that's a
just on 80. So I don't have off the top of my head how many of those were tagged, but yeah, we definitely keep track of tagged roadkill for sure.
Okay, Jim Oxley, thanks so much for joining us on Rockin' Finn. You have a happy new year, brother. We'll be seeing you in the new year. Very successful bear season, 467 total, a few less than last year. Weather was a factor to my lovely Dee Marie. I will promise not. I can't say that because I always put stuff in the universe. Jim, thanks again. Have a great new year. Hope to see Sportsman's Jamboree coming up this spring. Going to be there?
Yeah, up at
Hudson Farm.
Casey.
I got Hudson Gill.
Farm.
I still call it the Hudson Gill. I had some work up there back in the 90s. Yeah, Hudson Farm up there by Wild West City, 206 Stanhope or something like that. Yeah, North Jersey. Yeah. Tom P will be back in the house. Okay, Jim. Yeah. Hey, listen. Bring a rod and reel. I know a couple of ponds on that property, and there's no cameras. We got bass there as big as your chest. Oh my God!
Nice.
You didn't hear me say that.
Okay, no, Jim,
you take care, brother. Be good.
All right.
See you.
Song bye.
Jim Oxley, Bureau Chief, DEP's Fish and Wild. Yeah, 467 Bruins. Not bad. But weather is a factor. Now, the bears don't always, they're not true hibernators. I explained it in the digest. Right? This is my wildlife courses. I remember once we were fishing up North Jersey. It was the, I think we were up in the Flatbrook area. Coming around a bend in the stream, my cousin says, "Hey, man, we got company." I said, "What, other guys down there at the pool?" Son of a blip, 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 because I know there were trout in there. It was one of those, we had, it was like third day of 60, 65 degree weather in February, one of those anomalies. You really get pumped up for spring. Trout are coming out, eating larvae. Coming, and he looked down the stream and says, "Whoa, I think we're going to pass up on that." Probably a 350, 400. Heard us stop midstream cross out of Flatbrook. We were upper, not that wide. Okay, it's not like the lower flat. You know, you have plenty of space. I said, I think we're going to back up on this one. He looked at us like, yeah, right. And he just, you know, went wandering through the woods. But yeah, you never know, man. They show up, could show up at any time, anywhere. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio. Yogi and Boo Boo.
Hey, everyone. It's Mike Gill from the Sports Bash. As we wrap up another year, I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you. Your loyalty and support mean the world to me. Whether you're a longtime listener or just joined the Sports Bash, you are the reason we do what we do. I'll be taking a little break to recharge the battery, get ready for the Birds playoff run, but I'll be back on the air January the 5th from our family to yours. Have a wonderful holiday season and a very happy new year. Go Bird.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P on 97.3 ESPN.
Hey, that'll do it for this final weekend in December 2025 on Rack and Fin Radio. New year cut up. Hey, don't forget the Wildwood Fishing and Boating Expo. Mark it on your calendar. Going to be a great time. Friday, January 9th, 1 p.m., 7 p.m., Saturday, January 10th, 9:30 a.m., 5 p.m., Sunday, January 11th, 9:30 a.m., 2 p.m., giving away 3 Yeti coolers, one each day. These things are retail value around $400. Great time. Boat Central, man. You're looking for a, why want to buy a new float? the new boat. This is the place to do it. Remember, plenty of birds being stocked. They emptied the pens. Get out there for the 30th. They're going to be stocking the evening of the 29th. Remember, you're not promised tomorrow. Don't waste the day. Seize the day. Please, seize the day. You don't know how long you have. God bless America. God bless our troops. God bless our first responders and law enforcement. Happy New Year to all. Hopefully, we'll see you in 2026. Rack and Fin Radio.